This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. March Madness is back. The bracket has been revealed. The Cincinnati Bearcats are a 7 seed, and the Northern Kentucky Norse are back in the big dance as a 14 seed. The NCAA Men's Basketball Tournament is always exciting around here. Coming up, we talk with sports radio host Andy Furman and WXIX sports anchor Jeremy Roche about the outlook for UC and NKU and the tournament overall. But first, you're probably participating in a bracket challenge, either online or in your office or both. If someone says that such activities are negatively impacting work productivity, you may be able to guess again. Working on your bracket while working at your job could be good for morale. American University marketing professor Benjamin Wright joins us on the phone to explain. Welcome, Ben.
Hey, Michael, how are you?
Doing well. Thanks for joining us. And if you'd like to call in and ask any questions or give us some comments, it's 513-419-7100. You can also email talk at wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll look for your comments and your tweets. So, Ben, the Chicago Tribune reported a couple years back that a Chicago-based outplacement firm found that companies stand to lose $2.1 billion in lost wages because of workers being distracted and unproductive due to the NCAA tournament. That firm, they're called Challenger, Gray, and Christmas. They also found that each hour of unproductive work time for the more than 23 million tournament brackets produced by workers will cost employers $615 million. That sounds like a lot of money, Ben, but you've got a sunnier outlook on all this.
Yes, that is an insane amount of money, no doubt.
But
we hear these.
Yeah,
sorry, go ahead.
No, please go ahead. I want you to talk about why you see this in a sunnier way.
Yeah, so we see these staggering statistics in loss, wages, and productivity every year around this time. But there's also a lot of upside to this tournament. Some of the studies that come out look at maybe 90% of people who participate in these office pools. I think that this helps build team camaraderie. It makes a more inclusive work environment. Now, if it negatively impacts the bottom line, we can see where managers are coming from. But a lot of times there are other ways to maybe make up that time. And it's all about the environment in which these workers are actually being placed in the first place.
So you said that the March Madness events and brackets can boost morale in the workplace. How did you go about reaching that conclusion?
So there's a lot of research that's done, and it's all about, you know, what is the lost productivity. But then there's some other interesting surveys that are done that are just kind of publicly accessible through some of our research accessibilities we have at the university. And one statistic really stood out to me that although companies may be losing all this money, something like 80% of the HR professionals said their organizations don't actually have policies to police these office pools. So to me, that seems like an opportunity for these employers to actually encourage people to get together, talk about something other than work, and actually use this as an opportunity to kind of build this kind of environment, I guess we could call it, to maybe not sit there all day every day of the tournament watching the games, but maybe bring it up in conversations, maybe use it as kind of a talking point outside of this traditional workplace kind of jargon and environment.
Your conclusion is supported by a report from Randstad US, which found almost 90% of workers agree that office pools help build team camaraderie. And nearly three quarters of workers say office pools make them more eager to go to work. And then nearly 40% say they became closer with a coworker after participating in this office pool. So that all sort of supports what you're saying. And you're a marketing professor. What inspired you to look into this issue? Was there some sort of academic activity behind this?
So I come from a sports marketing background. So this is kind of hits home for me. And although that I focus more on digital marketing right now, I still look at the ways in which organizations can use things like sports to kind of build this sense of camaraderie, or kind of how marketers could look at something like this. To me, it's kind of interesting that we don't hear this about the Olympics, the Masters golf tournament, college football. It's really the Super Bowl and March Madness is the usual suspects that get the lion's share of blame for unproductive workers. And I was just interested, why is that the case? And so, looking at talking with a bunch of employers, a bunch of employees from my personal experience as well, this was just something that was really interesting to me that I think most people are included. As we look at maybe 70 million brackets are filled out every year, there's clearly, you know, a driving force behind this. So I was just really curious about what was kind of behind these statistics from both the employer side and the worker side.
I'll read some more statistics about the alleged negative impact that brackets can have on the workplace. The Harvard Business Review in 2012 said U.S. businesses brace themselves as workers follow the tournament on their computers. It's estimated that 2.5 million workers will access online coverage of the NCAA basketball tournament. This is 6 years ago, so it could be more now. And those fans will spend an average of 1.5 hours a day watching games and highlights. And then in a recent survey, this is recent to 2012, more than 40% of IT professionals said that the spike in internet use has affected their office computer operations in recent years, in some cases causing their systems to grind to a halt. This year, estimates of lost productivity range from $175 million to $1 billion. Ben, when you first made this argument that this type of activity can boost workplace morale, you did it 2 years ago, you said that bosses should be more lenient during the tournament. So in the 2 years since you first came out with this, have you heard any feedback that your advice has been heeded?
Yeah, sure. Close by and far away, I've heard both positive and negative takes on what I said. And I think that employers specifically have to evaluate if the short-term increase in social capital in the office is worth potential losses in productivity and ultimately the bottom line. My guess and my kind of hypothesis with this is if this is included, if this is involved as an engaging workplace, this is a place that people want to work. They might want to stay longer. They might want to work a little extra the following week or the previous week. It shouldn't be treated as just this bleak event that's going to bankrupt companies because, you know, it's just the reality that people are connected to technology today. I mean, this is certainly a potential office distraction, but so is Facebook, so is texting, and we can't expect workers to be engaged 100% of the time in 2019. That's just the reality of the workplace. So if anything, this might be an opportunity for workplace leaders to use March Madness to facilitate something like employee bonding or even become a part of the camaraderie themselves.
So you said in an interview with The Atlantic that managers should integrate college basketball into the workplace this time of year. How would they go about doing that?
Yeah, absolutely. So it could be anything from an official office pool. It could be something like kind of a contest. I mean, I know obviously the office pools depend on the legality of state to state and if there's actual money exchanging hands. For the most part, though, that's just kind of a fun way to include people. It could be something like a team building exercise where you're paired up with other employees and trying to compete against the boss or other departments. And there has to be a limit. I mean, I'm not someone saying that people should just be watching the tournament all day on Thursday and Friday this week, but like I said, I think that there's a way to boost this morale and potential long-term gains if everyone is really enjoying coming to work and looking forward to this versus looking at how can I get away with watching this or how can I work from home that day. That's really the negative outlook that I think most of traditional businesses might look at that in that light.
You're a marketing professor, and the NCAA tournament is such a strong brand. People who don't pay attention to basketball all year are suddenly engaged in this thing. How does this event, from a marketing standpoint, sustain that kind of success each year?
It's the ultimate competition, right? I mean, there's not much subjectivity in it. It's more objective. You're looking at a 64-68 team field. It's nothing like college football, where you've got a committee. It's all about, okay, you get into the tournament, you have to win 6-7 games, and you're crowned champion. So I think it's this kind of way that we all grew up playing sports, where it was more of a seeded tournament. It's something that's just such a grand scale. And then I think TV and communication is something that's really changed the game with this. When you look at the amount of people that are watching these games, this is really where the marketing side comes in, because companies are just running to basically advertise on TV, online, on apps now, ways in which they can get their name out there and kind of associate themselves with this March Madness brand.
You had mentioned earlier that it's basically comparable only with the Super Bowl. What makes these two sporting events so unique in the American sports interest?
Right. I think it's part of our culture. I mean, the Super Bowl is something that everybody seems to watch. I mean, it's always one of the highest or the highest rated TV segments or shows, if we want to call it that, based on ratings every year. March Madness, if it's spread out, doesn't reach that level, but it's something that everyone likes to talk about. For whatever reason, these two have been kind of included in our society. It's something that everyone can sort of connect to or at least acknowledge. That can't be said about some of these other sporting events that are more niche and maybe don't have the reach. This is something, again, I think that TV has built, right? Without TV, I don't think any of this is to the level it is today, but it's certainly something that most of us can connect with or share with, and we can also provide a time to get together with people we like, friends and family, and kind of enjoy these events in a social aspect.
Well, let's get personal here. You have degrees from Bowling Green, Florida State, and Indiana. You've taught at Ball State. Now you teach at American. Where do your loyalties lie in March?
So I'm going to be rooting hard for my Seminoles. They got the 4 seed, although I think it should have been a 3 seed. But I think that they got a good shot in their division.
Well, we'll all be here working on our brackets now that you've given us permission to do that. So do you have any advice for the final 4 picks?
Let's see. I think Duke's looking good. I think I like my Seminoles. I think North Carolina is still a good team. And then I think it's anybody's in the other region. So I think that those would be my 3 or 4, and then I'm still kind of torn on the 4th.
All right. That's an ACC-heavy pick. All right, cool. Professor Benjamin Wright from American University, we so appreciate you taking some time to talk to us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Up next, sports radio host Andy Furman and WXIX sports anchor Jeremy Rausch joins us to talk about UC and NKU as they prepare for the tournament. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. The Northern Kentucky Norse and the Cincinnati Bearcats are back in the NCAA tournament. What are their chances? Joining us now on the phone, our sports radio host, Andy Furman. Welcome, Andy.
How you doing? Thanks for having me.
And WXIX sports anchor, Jeremy Rao. Welcome, Jeremy.
Hey, appreciate you having me.
Feel free to join in the conversation. Email talk at WVXU.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll look for your comments and your tweets for Jeremy or Andy. So, guys, I'm glad you both took some time out to talk about this. It's a big time of year around here, and the Bearcats are back in the NCAA tournament for the 9th straight year. Only 4 other programs have been to the tournament more times in active streaks: Kansas, Duke, Michigan State, and Gonzaga. That's good company. So, Andy, let's start with you. Talk about the season Mick Cronin and his guys have had.
I tell you what, I mean, I think Mick Cronin's done a tremendous job. I mean, I was really surprised, really, with the seeding of number 7. Look at a school like Belmont, he's seeding number 6 in a conference not half as good as the AAC. But like Mick Cronin said after the game yesterday, I mean, seeding doesn't mean much. It's like who you play and see what you're made of. And they got a tough road to hoe. They really do. They got Iowa. Iowa's a tough one. I mean, you look at where they're in. I mean, Virginia's number 1 right there. How tough is that South they're in? Wisconsin's always real tough. They're tough in March. They're a 5 seed. Villanova's in that bracket. They're the Big East champions. They won 2 of the last 3 national championships. They're a 6 seed. And the good news for Virginia, maybe the fact that they're going to win this thing, but they're pretty stingy on defense. So it's a real tough road for Mick Cronin and UC. But, you know, they got to take care of business first, and that's going to be Iowa. But I'm happy that Jeremy Rausch is here. He's my guy. He's my idol. I could care less about UC right now. I'm just so happy that Jeremy's here with me.
Jeremy,
Andy, we finally made it, man.
Yes.
I knew this would be fun. So, Jeremy, let's talk about what Andy just mentioned. I mean, the Bearcats got a 7 seed. Was that expected? Was that disappointing?
Well, I think the thing is that we've noticed, and by the way, Andy, thanks for the love, man. I've always loved kind of seeing your stuff and seeing your work, and I appreciate you giving me the shout-outs that you do. But talking about UC, you know, I tweeted this out yesterday and got some blowback for it, which is fine. You know, when UC won the American Conference Tournament Championship, I thought that that would potentially lift them to a 6 seed and maybe at the highest possible ceiling a 5 seed. But I felt like a 6 seed was a pretty safe bet. But I think one thing that, you know, I tend to forget from year to year and that I need to remember is that the committee does not care one iota about the outcome of the American Conference Tournament Championship. We've seen year in and year out where we think that will play a factor, have some sort of a deciding role in saying whether a team drops a seed or goes up a seed or stays. And UC has been projected as a 7 seed, essentially, since the brackets came out with Joe Lenardi, who's one of the best at predicting all this stuff, because Jerry Palmas had him too high all along with CBS Sports. And so they've been projected a 7 seed all along. They win the American Conference Tournament. against a team that is now a 3 seed in the tournament, Houston, and a really good team who had 2 losses all year before that loss on Sunday. And you think for sure that vaults them to a 6 seed. But again, as history has told us, it feels like that game never really has a deciding outcome in what they will end up being in the tournament. Like, they lock it in before the game, and that is where UC stayed at that 17 anyways. But I think they take the trade-off with getting that spot in Columbus. I mean, that is such a fantastic thing for Bearcats fans to be right up the road, as opposed to, let's say, being a 6 seed and playing out in San Jose.
Good point. Now, it will basically be sort of a home game for the Bearcats. They're 28-6 overall this season. And like you said, Jeremy, they beat a tough Houston team to win the American Athletic Conference tournament. So in recent years, there's been all this conference realignment. And it does seem, of all the original historic blue blood basketball programs, Cincinnati's the one that's mostly been lost in the shuffle here. So is their presence in this conference a detriment to their NCAA tournament placement?
No, honestly, I think that the conference is secondary to who you play and who you play non-conference. I think the non-conference schedule hurt them. I give an example there. St. John's. I mean, St. John's was 12-0 before they went into the conference. They had a losing record in the Big East Conference. I was shocked they even made the tournament. Now, they were in the playing game in Dayton, but St. John's lost 5 out of the last 7 ball games, and they're still in. Xavier beat them twice, and I'm thinking, like, how does that happen? How does St. John's get in? Xavier does not. How does NC State not get in and Belmont get in? So I'd like to see this committee be a little more transparent, where I could find out who's doing the voting and how they vote.
Last year, go ahead.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Mike.
No, please, Jeremy, if you have some thoughts on that, I'd love to hear them.
Yeah, no, I just feel like, you know, it's been a year-to-year thing with the American, you know, since its inception in 2013, and Mick Cronin is always battling for the American to try to get respect to the American Conference. It's a tough thing because, you know, you have certain conferences, even like the Big East, and a down year in the Big East, you have a chance within that conference to get a lot of those quad one wins, which are big, obviously, for resume builders. And you look at other conferences like the ACC and then teams like NC State, you know, we think they have a chance to kind of build that resume, even if they end up being 9th or 10th in the conference. In the American, you've got to be really in the top 3 or 4, which, by the way, the Pac-12 is in that same kind of slot right now as the American Athletic Conference is. So it's a tough thing for UC to get a lot of those true quality wins outside of, you know, teams like a UCF this year, Temple, depending on if it's a win on the road, and then Houston. So it's a tough thing to gain that respect. And as we've seen, UC hasn't been able to get that except for last year when they started off really projected to be a great team all season long and kind of rode that line all season for the most part, but they're able to get that 2 seed, which is kind of like what Houston did this year.
So last year with that seeding, they had a pretty comfortable lead in the second round of the tournament over Nevada, but the Wolfpack came back and knocked the Bearcats out of the tournament. Jeremy, I don't remember if it was you or Joe Dannemann that Mick Cronin had some words for in the post-game press conference. I guess one of you had
that
asked.
Me.
Yeah, that was you. And I guess you asked if he was going to lose sleep or something along those lines.
What did he say? Yeah. I want to hear this.
It was a unique exchange. And here's the thing, you know, if you guys have been around the area long enough, I've covered UC for 5+ years now since I've come here. And Mick Cronin in the tournament, obviously he wants to win games. He wants to win the tournament. But when something doesn't go right, he will usually say something along the lines of, it doesn't define our season. It doesn't define who we are, who I am as a coach. And he was pushing back on that a little bit last year after UC had that 22-point lead over Nevada with 10 minutes left, and then they lost the game. And that one hurt. That stung. That's a tough one to take. And Mick was kind of pushing back on, this one would define us. So I simply followed up a couple of times, and one of the last things I said is this something you lose sleep over, is the way I worded the question, a loss like this. And he said, lose sleep? How am I going to lose sleep? I haven't been to bed yet. How would I know? So he came back at me with a very literal response. Obviously, in the heat of the moment, he was annoyed. But the thing is, and I had some back and forth with others about this, is he was coming off as if he wasn't bothered by the loss as much, as if he wasn't annoyed, as if losing again and not making the Sweet 16 did not bother him and did not define him. And so when I followed up that way, and he did show a lot of that emotion and anger at me about asking if he would lose sleep over it, I think it showed something. I think it showed some human aspect there that it does bother Mick. I know that sounds like an obvious statement. I mean, obviously it bothers him, but he always kind of pushes back on whether or not it defines the season. And we saw some real emotion, and he actually said there, he said, call me tomorrow and see if I slept. And so I called him the next day. We were on our way back from Nashville. I called him. I said, Mick, I'm just checking in. And I actually apologized to him for the exchange, because
no matter who was at fault, when you had those kind of reporter, you know, coach exchanges, I wanted to make sure there was no bad blood and that it was all good. And quite frankly, things have been great this year. We haven't had a bad exchange this year, and I would hope there wouldn't be another one. But it's just one of those things. I think you have to ask. I think you have to press in when there is a certain narrative that feels a bit transparent. Like it's maybe not a true narrative, that these things do really bother you. I think you have to push back on that a little bit and wonder, hey, you had a 22-point lead with 10 minutes left. How much does this really stink?
So is there any evidence?
Can we agree on one thing? That, to me, at least, it does define you. It defines your team. Because you play all year long to get into the postseason, to get into the big dance, the NCAA tournament. And if you lose, and the way they lost was pitiful. It was disgusting the way they lost that game. It was like 7 minutes to go, and they were up 22 points, and they lost the game. I mean, come on. It defines your season because that's how people remember you. And that's how people remember Virginia. They're the only team ever to lose to a 16th seed. That's what they talk about all the time. That's exactly how you define.
And you're never going to go back and – you're never going to go back and look at, and granted, I mean, I talked about this a while ago on the news with Joe Dannemann. We were talking about it, and I said, listen, I said, it's kind of like, and he didn't like the analogy because he doesn't like icing, but whatever. it's kind of like you know the flavor of cake, right? And you know that cake is good if you've had it because it's got the whole package, right? It doesn't just have the good taste of, like, you know, the cake portion. It's got the icing on the cake. You know what it tastes like. So if you win a conference tournament championship, it's like having cake without icing. But this is good. This has good consistency to it, but you know there's something that would make it a little bit better. And a cake is defined by its icing. You don't go to a grocery store and see all these cakes laid out. You're an Angel Food Cake guy. You know, like, you don't see all these cakes laid out without icing. Every cake you see in a grocery store has icing on it. That is exactly how it is known, what it is known for, what it's supposed to be. And so that was my analogy is, you go to the tournament, what you do there is icing on the cake. That is what you are defined by. That is the, that's what it's supposed to be. That is what the season is supposed to be defined by. And you can have all that regular season success. You can win the conference tournament. It's a fantastic achievement. But the icing on the cake is what you do in March.
And that's why coaches get bonuses for going deep into the tournament. Think about it. You ask Nick Cronin what his contract is like. For every round he goes, he gets another 10 grand, I'm sure.
I got to say that all this cake talk is going to cost me some sleep, I think, in the coming nights ahead. But look, UC, 9 years in a row in the big dance on its resume. But in those 9 years, the Bearcats have only made it to the Sweet 16 in the tournament's second weekend once. That was back in 2012. If UC gets past Iowa in the opening round, it's likely they'll face a tough Tennessee team. That's the second seed in that bracket. What has to happen for the Bearcats to make it to next week?
I mean, really and truly, they got to shoot. And they got to, I mean, it's such a statement, which is such a ridiculous statement, but they got to make shots, number one, but they got to rebound. And they got to rebound like they did against Houston yesterday. They were very, very aggressive off the boards yesterday. They came to play. They were hungry. And I got to believe they'll be ready. I'm sure they'll be ready. But you know what? It's very difficult in a short span of time to get scouting reports and tape on a school like Iowa, which is a tough school, and they play better competition all year long than UC plays. And I think that's a major factor as well.
Andy, I think, you know, when you look at Iowa, and let's just talk about the first game, Michael, as well. You know, like this Iowa challenge, it's not like that UC hasn't defeated a Big Ten team before. They did it just a few years ago, obviously, when they took down Purdue at the last second to get to the second round, eventually losing to UK. But you look at this Iowa team, and I've watched a decent amount of the Big Ten this year. This Iowa team started out 20-5, and they were really highly thought of. They've now lost 5 of 6, 6 of their last 8. They were blown out by Michigan in the Big Ten tournament, blown out by Ohio State team, who has been struggling in their own right down the stretch. So they're really a Jekyll and Hyde team. It's hard to figure out who they're going to be. And like anything, it's really true with Iowa. When they're shooting the ball well, when they're hitting the three, they are a completely different animal. And on the UC side of things, if Jaron Cumberland, who's been a bit hot and cold as of late, if he can be anything close to what he was in the championship game on Sunday, that 33 points he scored, and we've seen some great performances by him this season, you can ask the role guys. You can ask guys like Justin Jennifer, who's shooting 45% from three this season and has had some great performances. Trayvon Scott has taken a big step forward. Nyzer Brooks, those kinds of guys. But if Jaron Cumberland isn't the Jaron we know to be the conference player of the year, I don't think anything will matter going beyond this first game against Iowa.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We're talking to sports radio host Andy Furman and WXIX sports anchor Jeremy Rao. What kind of legacy do you guys think Mick Cronin has carved out for himself up in Clifton?
That's a heck of a question, really. First of all, I think he wouldn't do that until he retires or just quits or moves on to another place. But I think right now that he has taken a program that was really an abyss. I mean, the program was in its worst shape ever when he took over. So what he has done is an amazing job. And the fact that to get kids to come to Clifton at the time when he did, before the arena was renovated, it wasn't the greatest place to play. They're not in the greatest conferences. And I think to get a kid to come there is an accomplishment, and certainly to win and what he has done. I mean, you could comment on the scheduling. Certainly, he plays some of those off-Broadway schools, and people are very some at least are very upset about not having the major schools on the schedule as far as non-conference. But what he has done as a whole, tremendous job. And he'll be remembered as one of the all-time coaches if you see history.
Yeah, and to play off of that, Michael, apologies, I want to interrupt you there. I think you mentioned it, the nine straight appearances that UC has had, I think is an incredible achievement. I think the success that he's had, I mean, you look at what UC has had over the last 3 years, going into Sunday, 88 total wins over the last 3 years. Only two programs in the entire country has done that. That is Villanova and Gonzaga. And that's an incredible achievement. So the tough thing is, as we've talked about, is part of his legacy will undoubtedly be he has won Sweet 16. That will be part of his legacy. And I don't know what's going to happen this year and beyond, but right now that is a huge part of his legacy. But you also have to look at the success he's had along the way. Again, the nine straight tournament appearances. And a season like this, where they lose guys like Gary Clark and Kyle Washington and Jacob Evans, a couple of NBA guys in there, and they reel off a 28-6 record. And all season long, they've been fighting perception. I mean, it started with, Nick will tell you, the Ohio State loss at the start of the season. And it was fighting against that narrative that UC was going to take a massive step back. And here they are on the doorstep, two wins away. It would take a lot, but two wins away from getting the 30 wins yet again. I think that says a lot about Mick Cronin and what he has done all the way across the board. This season, I think, might be one of the best coaching jobs he's had.
Let's talk
about...
The good news is,
if you were to ask Mick Cronin about his legacy, he would tell you that the NCAA tournament will not define him. So that's a good thing. That's a great thing, really. So the fact that he's been to only one Sweet 16, throwing it out the door because he could care less. He couldn't care less about that.
Well, let's talk about Northern Kentucky. The Norse are back in the tournament for the second time in 3 years. They've only been eligible for this thing in the past 3 years. Talk about the job that head coach John Brannan is doing in Highland Heights. Andy, start with you.
I tell you what, you talk about a guy who's taken over a program from Division II to Division I. He's been to two NCAA tournaments in the last 3 years. Local guy, be able to recruit locally. I think that is tremendous feat, what he has done. I mean, they're a player now. They're a major player, and they're going to play Texas Tech, which is tough. You know, three seed, which won the Big 12, but still in all, they're there. And they got a shot. I mean, I'm going to tell you right now, they're a pretty good offensive team. They average almost 80 points a game. They're shooting almost 50% from the field. They got four guys in double figures, which makes it a little tougher for a Texas Tech team to defend. And I'll tell you something else. I think it's going to be very difficult for Texas Tech to get some tape on Northern Kentucky. I mean, how are they going to get some tape on NKU where they're not really on TV that much? So we'll see what happens there. But, you know, right now you'd have to say that Northern Kentucky is the underdog in that game. But what they have accomplished in the last 3-4 years is almost an amazing situation.
Jeremy,
yeah, I think the last time I looked, Andy, I believe they're a 15-point dog to Texas Tech right now as far as the betting odds go. But what John Brannan has done has been incredible. He and Drew McDonald have just year by year taken this program to an incredible level. To think what they have done with the conference championships, the conference tournament championships. Andy mentioned the two tournament appearances in 3 years. And last night, this is where this has gotten now with John Brannan, is he was asked by, I believe it was a student reporter at NKU, basically, do you plan on staying here? Because I think everyone realizes that this is the end of an era in some regards, with Drew McDonald going to graduate and understanding there might be a slight drop-off potentially. And John Brannan simply very diplomatically said, I love this university. I don't have anything bad to say about this university. It's a place that I love, my family loves, and he wouldn't say anything more. But I can tell you last year, there were a lot of
programs coming after John Brandon. One of them was a Heisman major in Middle Tennessee State, and that's going to continue this year, this offseason, when things are done, regardless of whether or not NKU can somehow pull off an upset over Texas Tech or not. It's just been incredible to watch what he has done, and Texas Tech is going to be a tough challenge. They shared the Big 12 title. They made the Elite Eight last year as a three seed as well, but we do see some holes in who they are. West Virginia, God love Bob Huggins, but it has been a really, really bad year for West Virginia, and they knocked off Texas Tech in the Big 12 tournament. So it's going to be an interesting game. I think NKU can hang around quite a bit, but regardless of what happens in this game, I would not be surprised at all if John Brannan is moving on after this season.
Wow, that's interesting, and I would imagine that they pull off an upset in Texas Tech. Those calls are only going to increase. And like you mentioned, Jeremy, Drew McDonald, a Newport Central Catholic product, he's graduating this year. And is NKU going to be able to sustain this level of success looking ahead of the recruiting class and the guys who will be left behind?
It's going to be tough to replace a guy like, it's going to be tough to replace a guy like Drew McDonald because, you know, I did a sit down with him recently, and he's a guy, and you both have been around, he's a guy that I watched him at NUCAT this senior season and thought he might have a nice career wherever he ends up going. And he said he wasn't even sure he wanted to go to NKU because it just kind of meant staying home. And it was one of those things where, you know, I guess NKU will settle for Drew McDonald, a guy like him. And he came in with a different kind of motivation and just a chip on his shoulder that no one thought he could. I mean, think about what he has accomplished. He has become one of the only 25 players in Division I college basketball history with 2,000 points, 1,000 rebounds, 250 assists. He's set records at the school. He has obviously led this team to two NCAA tournaments. So it's going to be tough to bring in a guy with that kind of heart and passion because at the mid-major level, as you guys know, it's not just about getting in some talent and they've got a guy who's Mr. Basketball coming in next year who's going to be a fantastic player. They've got talent coming in and they've got talent still there. But you always need that guy who is the true lifeblood of a team that somehow finds a way to get a 2-point win over Cleveland State and the conference semifinals when you might end up losing that game otherwise. Because that's what it comes down to. It's a one-bid league. You need a guy who somehow gets you over the edge, and that will be tough to sustain, I think, regardless of who they get in when a guy like Drew McDonald leaves.
You see,
you know, Jeremy brings up a great point because that Horizon League, it's almost anticlimactic going to the NCAA tournament because if you win that Horizon League tournament, you're in. If you lose it, no matter what your record is, you're going to go home or maybe go to the NIT. And I remember 2 years ago, NKU had to play like Wisconsin-Milwaukee in the championship game. Once Wisconsin was something like 9-19. If in fact Wisconsin-Milwaukee would have beaten them, they would have gone, although NKU had a 20-plus win season. It's crazy what they do. It's almost ludicrous. And really and truly, I disagree with the whole situation and why even have those tournaments because the season really boils down to 3 or 4 days. That's basically what it is. So if you win that tournament, it's anticlimactic going to the thing, and beating Texas Tech or losing to Texas Tech doesn't really mean much right now, at least to me, because what they have accomplished just to get in there is a tremendous hurdle. Look, you see yesterday, win, lose, or draw, they're going. They beat Houston, but even if they would have lost, they're still going. But with NKU, it's a different animal.
It's a good point. And they will both be playing at the same time on Friday. UC tips off at 12:15, and NKU plays at 1:30. There will be a lot of busy television sets. We've just got a minute left. I think it's important that we touch on Thomas Moore. The women's basketball team brought another NCAA Division III title back to Crestview Hills this season. Jeremy, you were there. What was the atmosphere like?
It was incredible. I can tell you, Michael, that a lot of fans traveled, and it was just neat to see the way they capped off the season because they did face some adversity in the tournament. I know a lot of people don't expect Thomas Moore to face adversity. They had one game where they were trailing at halftime and came back and won by 8, but the rest of the way they won by double digits. And they were trailing by 6 in the first half to this Bowdoin team. And, man, they pulled it on in the second half. They ended up winning by double digits again. And the 2015 title, I understand, was vacated. But to think about the level that they have played at, 3 of the last 5 years with championship performances, and really the senior class to have 2 in 4 years is incredible. And to think about the way Thomas Moore recruits in the area, they grab a lot of these girls from the area who are not going D1 or even D2, you name it, and kind of want to stay home. They grab some great players who aren't doing D1 kind of playing at the next level, and they come in and they deliver a perfect season, 33-0 over Thomas Moore. But it's really cool to see that play out. And Couldn't be happier for Jeff Hands. He's a great guy, their head coach, and just to see what they've accomplished, again, two times in 4 years for that senior class.
Andy Furman, incredible. Jeremy Rao, really appreciate that perspective. Appreciate you all joining us. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. I'm Michael Monks. Subscribe to our podcast at WVXU.org.